We're happy to be in Isaiah today, and I'm going to take time in class for some folks to, we had our big conference this weekend on the meaning of sex. It started off really slow, and then the last three sessions were outstanding. It was like, you know, way over your head on the first talk, and then three of the best talks I've ever heard on that, so 3-1. Good. So, I mean, I take that as a success. So, people who only heard the first one have no idea really what the conference was about. So, if you didn't stay for the question and answers. But I'm asking people that were in this conference, or any portion of it, but especially the last three, but I would like to know something you took away, something positive you learned. But I want you to think about it, so we're going to go into a class a little bit, and then we'll stop, and then we'll do that, if you feel like it. It's be good for people to know. I think next week we may even do a little bit more in detail during the Sunday part, because so many people that come to our church that don't even come to Sunday school and miss out on lots of stuff. So, but that's next week. So be thinking about one thing you took away. Maybe two things. One or two things you took away from that conference. And just be thinking. Let's see, I don't know if I'm going to start. Isaiah chapter 21. It starts a crazy, you can say enigmatic, it's kind of vague, it's kind of ethereal, it's kind of out there, but not really, but it's typical prophets. He's beginning his second series of oracles, words from God, and they have cryptic titles, except in the last one where Tyre was a real big city, and you know kind of what it is. And the sequence is the same as in the other series. Number one, the sequence follows this: the downfall of human attempts to bring order in the world by superpower domination. They did have superpowers in those days, and everybody knew it. Empire, they're called them empires. You know, the Empire Strikes Back for the future. I mean, this is like, we've always had empires, imperial, this and that. And the Lord talks about that. Number two, it's the long, drawn-out course of history with no end in sight, but the assurance of the coming day. So it's like, history goes on, but there is a day coming. There's hope. There's something going to change. There's a section about the Gentile world in travail, messed up, having troubles. But they try a solution, and it's collective security. They get together, and it's collective security. Is that bad? I don't know. You know, collective security is not always bad. We like to live in community. That can be really good. It's the attitude toward collective security. I mean, I would love to live in a gated community. I lived in Florida. If you don't live in a gated community in Miami, Florida, you got some trouble. You better. But the attitude toward gated communities and gated collective security can be such that you're like, well, Hezekiah, when he built the tunnel, and it was an insult to God. I would have never thought that. Jerusalem was a city that did not have an internal water supply. Now, if your enemy comes to you, you know, usually you have to siege a city, starve them. But since their water supply is outside, you have them immediately. So what does Hezekiah do? Well, the logical thing is to build an underground water, you know, connection to get water into Jerusalem so you don't have to be cut off with a siege and you're fine. That's what he did. And God said, you insulted me with common sense. Well, today we would do this. We would be building right away. We would have people probably working right now out there. You can skip church for that. No, but the Lord took it as an insult because of the attitude toward collective security. That it's really everything. And you don't need God. So he's not saying collective security is wrong. But he says you can have a bad attitude. You can have this closed off attitude that it's everything, that you don't even need God. That's part of it. A fourth section, the Lord's professing people. They deal with the issues of the world. Not always by turning to God, but by sometimes turning to self-sufficiency. That's what I guess you could say even Hezekiah did. And last, it's an ultimate, the worldly nation are becoming holiness to God. In other words, if there's an end in which the Lord is King of kings and Lord of lords. And Isaiah telescopes to the end and says, you know, here's the Messiah reigning, how beautiful it is. So that's what's happening in chapters 25, 26, and 27. You know, the little apocalypse, they call it, of Isaiah. We won't get there, but we're looking in Isaiah chapter 21. The desert by the sea, the Babylonian, well, they call it the Babylonian principle. Let's look at verse 1. As whirlwinds in the Negev, the desert, come after one another, from the wilderness it comes, from a land to be feared. Verse 2, it's a harsh vision that has been declared to me. The deceiver goes on deceiving, and the destroyer goes on destroying. Up Elam. Elam's right. Elam's Iran, in part of Iran. That happens to be right by Babylon. Besiege Media, or Media, or Media, which is Medes and Persians. That's the Persian area. That means Babylon is kind of, you're kind of like, well, these are right around Babylon. Are you talking about Babylon? Verse the next, continuing. All sighing I have determined to bring to an end. Therefore, and it must be a really hard vision. My stomach's full of nausea. Pangs have gripped me like the pangs of a woman in labor. They didn't do the drugs like we do. Pangs of a woman in labor is real hard. But no, that's painful. I am racked by what I hear, terrified by what I see. This is Isaiah. Is this Isaiah talking about himself? I think. Or is it someone else? I mean, I think what it is. I know what I think it is, but what do you think? Chapter 21. I'm reading a very literalistic translation. I mean, a different kind of translation, but a little bit more free with the Hebrew. So it's Isaiah's reaction or a reader's reaction? I do too. I thought it was Isaiah's too. And I still think that. So, but correct me if I'm wrong. This is what the Sovereign Lord, the Lord, said to me. Is that what you said? What? So it's Isaiah. That's what I think too. So, okay, we're on the same page. I'm just checking. So Isaiah sees a prophecy that makes him sick to his stomach. Verse 4, my heart palpitates or wonders. Shuddering alarms me, the twilight of my longing. He has made me into trembling for me. No, the twilight of my longing he has made into trembling for me. That for which I longed, he's made it into trembling, something that unnerves me, unravels me. What did he see? Well, let's look. I love what you're saying, David. And, you know, it goes back to this old saying to me. One man's trash is another man's blank. What? treasure. One man's fear is another man's victory, excitement, joy. One man's dread is another man's happy day. You can go on. You know, you can fill in the blank like you want to. But here it's like, I love what you're saying, because it's the same experience of the morning for some alcoholics is like, where's my drink and my Bloody Mary? And for some people, it's like, Lord, praise you. This is a day that you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it, even though there's some pain in my life. But they're still praising God. You can't praise God in the morning. It's not good enough. Well, I'm praising God in the morning. One man's is another man's, because we are separated out. That's why sanctification is so important for us. We're different. We don't like to be different. But this prophecy is something that scared, viscerally evoked in Isaiah, nausea. Wow, that's pretty bad. Well, let's see what he says in verse 5. It may be the reaction, or the laying of tables, the spreading of rugs, the eating, the drinking. Up, princes, anoint the shield. What does that mean? I'll tell you what I think it means, but what do you know? You may have a better idea than me, because it's kind of strange. He's seen a picture of something. I see that. And it may be this. They're having a big party before they go to war and anointing their shields for battle. Who are they? It's not the enemy. It's the people who think they're going to beat the Assyrians. It's the people who are we can beat the Assyrians. It's the Israelites. Anybody that wants to rise up against the Assyrians, even in Judah. But it's the people who had thinking that, you know, we can really beat these guys, or anybody thinking they can rise up against this battle, in this battle. And it's not going to be pleasurable for them. And I don't know, that's one interpretation. It may not be right. This is kind of strange stuff. Verse 6, let's go to verse 6, which Jimmy talked about. For this is what the Lord, the sovereign, that's the Adonai, has said to me. Go set a lookout who will tell what he sees. Well, what is that? Well, a lookout on your lookouts on your city's walls to say, you know, what's going on? And when he sees a mounted troop with paired horses, a mounted troop on donkeys, a mounted troop on camels, let him pay close attention, great attention. Verse 8. And lion that he is, he cried out, on the lookout, sovereign, I stand constantly, daily. And on my duty watch, I post myself night after night, and behold, now it comes. He's having a vision of something. Standing on a lookout, looking for mounted troops coming. Why is he called a lion? I don't know. What does your version say? It's verse 8. And lion that he is. Did you say anything about a lion? What does yours say? What did yours say? Yeah. Yeah. When you have an agreement between the Dead Sea Scroll texts, the Masoretic text is your number one text that came down in Hebrew. The Syriac is one of the oldest languages, and they translated Hebrew into that for those people who, it's like Syria, they've been around for Damascus. How long has that been around? Long time. When all three of those agree, you know that word's in the text. Lion is there. People don't know what to do with it. How many versions in here do not have lion in your reading? It's like, we don't know what to make. We don't know how to make sense of it. Let's throw the word out. That's what's happened in your text. Yeah, Shannon, what are you going to say? Okay, so it at least tells you in a note. we don't know what to do with it. We're going to put it in a note and tell you, you know, we couldn't make a lick of sense out of this. So let's just kind of, it's in the Word of God. And what it, the problem with making sense of it is that it's a picture, and you're supposed to get the picture. And you're supposed to get the picture of Isaiah is seeing the picture, and he's seeing a picture of a man on a big wall, and he's looking for something. What is he looking for? He's looking for a mounted bunch of troops coming. And they're so strong and mighty, they're even carrying their reinforcements on them. It's not just one guy by himself. He is carrying his horse so he can make real war. He's coming on his horse, and he's got an extra horse. He is double bad. So he says, look for this happening. And lion that he is, you're supposed to see that the person is crying out like a lion. How is he like a lion? It's a picture. Pardon? Roaring. The person on the wall is not just going through the motions. The Daily News, I just saw people walking on a horse. It says he is roaring. You got it exactly. And he's like, whoa, you're making some noise up there. What's going on with you up on that big wall? That's one aspect of being a lion. What's another aspect? If you call a human being a lion, that's a lion up there. Well, he's roaring. What else is a lion known for? If you, in usage of people. What? Yeah? But I don't know if that's what he's trying to attribute to that human being up there. I know he's doing the roar. I know it's a roar. Yes. Yeah.
The male purchases himself usually on some platform and sleeps.
Well, you can see everything, right?
He's able to see. But you would see them, and they're on the platform, and they're sleeping. You know who does all the work? The female lion. The female lion do.
They're very good at what they do.
They impact. They instigate the kill. He offers protection. That's what he is. He is, from on high, he is a protector. Although, a sleeping protector. But when roused, when irritated, yes, then he roars.
I would like to add, I think when you attribute lionness to people, I think it's courage. Richard the Lionhearted, you know, even in, that's not like in the Old Testament, but it's courageous. Yes. So, did somebody say something? Oh, he needed courage. That's essential to lion. Is that it? He needed some courage. Well, this roar wasn't very courageous, was it? So anyway, and I guess here's what we're learning about Isaiah. I know this is true. This seems trivial. It's so like, I don't want to be trivial, but I think it's significant that people kick out words of the Bible and don't tell you what they are, or you know, or just put it in a footnote. This is something I'm going to put in a footnote. I didn't know what to do with this, and it's because we have to understand that Isaiah's drawing pictures before he's doing anything. He says, the oracle that I saw. And he saw something that made him sick. And if we don't get the picture from Isaiah, we don't get Isaiah. Does that make sense? So I'm asking, you know, it's like almost like cartoons. Real life anime cartoons, you know. These are good. And it just so happens that you can kind of look over the book and say, oh my goodness, look. You kind of look out and see, is that real? I'm looking at the cartoon here, but It looks like the real thing, you know, like Magritte does that, you know, Magritte, the great artist, you know, he'll be painting something with that. Behind it's the real thing, and it looks like you're, this is prophecy. It's the same thing going on. Oh, it's real. No, it's anime. It's a cartoon. No, it's real. This is a vision. This is how the Lord's doing it. But I got to get the picture to get it. Lion standing on the pounder, standing on there, and one answered, I guess I'm in nine now, yeah, and said, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon, and all the images of its God he has shattered to the ground." Well, fallen, and then, fallen's one thing, that's bad. If you're fallen and shattered, what does that do for you? It's a worse degree. You know, I don't. It's okay to fall, because you can get back up. But if you fall and shatter, you don't rise so well again. This is a powerful prophecy. It's kind of strange. Yeah, we saw it. That was on big TV, wasn't it? And sure enough, fallen. Fallen is Babylon. So much so he couldn't say. It was so bad I couldn't even utter the fallenness of Babylon. So pretty powerful stuff. A big prophecy. A big slap. Verse 10, "Oh, you my crushed one, consigned to my threshing floor, what have I heard?" What I have heard, that is, directly from Yahweh of hosts, the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, I have told you. I will stop here. Yes. Yeah. You think so? Yeah. Well, that's a good question. Why was he upset when Babylon's an enemy in the big future? Why was he upset? It made him sick. What he saw made him sick. I mean, I think that he saw something so bad he wouldn't even wish it on his enemies. Have you ever been there? I have. I have even said, I wouldn't wish that on my enemy. That's how bad it was. That's how bad the judgment of God can be. That's what he's seeing. He's seeing a judgment that is so bad, I would not even wish it on my enemies. And coincidentally, I can't even tell you what I saw. This is a prophet, you know. Now, he does spell out stuff other times, but this is a vision he had one day that was so powerful it just blew him away and made him sick to his stomach, trembling, and he couldn't even articulate it all. But this is Babylon's fallen. That's kind of comforting to people who are under the thumb of Babylon, because this is what's going to happen eventually when Judah goes under Babylonian captivity.
What's it?
Has anybody been to Egypt here? I know some of you travel all over the place. And I've never been to Egypt either. I flew over it, and I was glad I didn't stop in, to be honest. But I know people that have these good pictures. There's some great pictures out there, and these people go to the ruins. And I saw this guy by the big toe. The big point was this guy was, it was on Flickr, and this guy was making a joke to his parents in America. "I'm standing by the big toe." And it's like this big toe It's that big. I mean, it's as big as this. And he's standing by this big toe of a statue of a king. And the toe, the little toe, the next two little toes are broken off. The heel, it goes up to the ankle, and then the back of the ankle is broken off. And then the rest of the body, I was over there, and then the best rest of the statue, which must have been real high. You look, you can see it behind him, it's crumbled. And it's every, I'm like, and then he wrote underneath it to his parents. Kind of reminds you of Ozymandias, doesn't it? Do you remember the story of Ozymandias? Ozymandias? That's a great poem from, I guess Percy Bysshe Shelley wrote that, or I think he did. You English majors, he did? Is it, you know, what does it say? Todd, do you recall some of that poem? Then we had to say it, right? Hey, behold, I'm Ozymandias, mighty. Behold, look on my works and despair, you mighty. That's one of the words, which is like an Egyptian king. My works, my pyramids, my everything, and despair. I am so mighty, despair. And then in the desert lies a broken statue, pebbles, and wind blowing over what Ozymandias did. You know, that's how kind of the poem ends. That's a mighty empire. That's the picture. That's the picture in Isaiah. So, I'll leave you with that. I want to stop this second and ask the folks that went to this conference, do you have anything, reflections on it? And for you who don't know about it, Forest Home had a conference Friday night and Saturday morning called On the Meaning of Sex. And it was a conference by a guy named Jay Budziszewski. He's a professor at University of Texas at Austin. He teaches, and he's a professor in government and philosophy. And he's done a lot of works, and he writes all kinds of stuff on natural law and revenge and self-deception. He's a good moralist. He was on the radio Friday. 100,000 people heard him, which is really kind of nice. And it's very well, you know, pretty 20-minute interview. The radio announcer twice did not go to advertisements. He does this. So that means he liked him. If he doesn't like him, they will go to advertisements and cut you off. But he rode over two radio breaks to just talk to this guy for 20 minutes solid. But anyway, it's more of a proactive, an aspirational study. So anyway, anything you want to say about the conference that you who were able to attend? Something you took away. Yeah, Anita. You mind standing up and telling her? Because I can't hear it very well.